What's the difference between stubbornness and persistence? Is there a difference between stubbornness and persistence? Now, some might say that stubbornness is grounded in pride. I'm not going to give in because if I gave in, well, my pride would suffer. But what is persistence grounded in? The story, as I have received it, from way back in the 60s, was that there was a preacher who would come up from the North Baltimore church to preach. Well, this wasn't here. Our church was over on the other side of the road at this point. And at a certain point in one of the council meetings, this preacher, I guess he was maybe moderator at the time, made a remark, and I don't know if it was an offhand remark or whatever, and perhaps some of you were here at the time. He said, because attendance was kind of low, it had never really been all that big to start with, but it was kind of low, and he said, well, you know, maybe what you should do is just close the doors and y'all come down to North Baltimore. That touched into a vein of, and I'm not sure if it was stubbornness or persistence. The person I heard this story from was our dear brother, Verlin Tombaugh. And I actually credit that preacher with being the spark that ignited something that led to, well, calling in a young school teacher who became a preacher by the name of Paul Groff. And this little church ended up growing to our peak in 1963. I guess we built this front part under his leadership, and it was all grounded in, well, was it stubbornness or was it persistence? I don't know. I'll let you be the judge of that. Speaking of judges, I love this story that Jesus told. You know, the story as we have received it in Luke's gospel kind of frames this story in the background being prayer, about being persistent in prayer, you know, not giving up. It's a story of a widow seeking justice. You just heard it. You just heard the story. I'm glad you read it from the Message, because I liked some of that, you know, about her persistence. She kept on, what was that wording, on and, you know, repeating, do you remember? She just kept on keeping after him. You know, she was persistent in seeking justice. What does it say? Badgering. Yeah, but keep going.
I better do something to see that she gets justice. Otherwise, I'm going to be eaten up. I'm going to be beaten. That's black and blue by her pounding.
For pounding? Keep going. Or was it before that?
My rights are being violated. Protect me?
No. Okay. But then that means I have to put on my glasses here.
Right here.
Okay. Come on. What again? Okay. Never quit. Maybe it was something you added when you were reading it. Yeah. Kept after him. I better do something. Otherwise, I'm going to be beaten black and blue by her pounding. Yeah, okay. I don't know. Maybe I was just listening with a different ear. Because I heard something in there that is about persistence. Keeping at it over and over and over again. She kept on badgering him. My version said she was bothersome. Okay, but that's where you see the title there. A bothersome gospel. Good news. Did you find it? Well, quit badgering. A badgering gospel. A bothersome gospel. Just keeps at it. The good news of bothersomeness? Is that a word? Probably not. But that's okay. She was persistent. Stubborn? I think persistence. And in this case, persistent in getting justice, persistent in, and I would maybe argue that at the bottom line of persistence lies faith, not pride. Faith, not pride. Try that on for size. We'll return to this story, but let's head over to Jeremiah. A wonderful passage in there. A passage of real good news, to be honest. And just read this over, because I think this talks about where our ability to be persistent comes from. Now, you may remember I preached on Jeremiah last week, and the situation at this point has changed a little bit. Last week's text came from a little bit earlier in Jeremiah, and at that point, the nation of Judah was still kind of half there. Babylon had come and invaded and had taken the king and the best and the brightest over to Babylonia. You know, by the waters of Babylon, we laid down and wept. This was the exile. But this was sort of the first exile. And there was a relative of rather weak king left in Jerusalem. And, you know, this is some kind of lesser folks there who were trying to make by, and the word going around both in Jerusalem and over in Babylon was that, you know, God's going to be moving real soon and he's going to change this situation, and the folks in Babylon are going to be coming home. And Jeremiah's word last week was saying, sorry, not so. It's going to be like 70 years you're going to be there. You got to, you know, instead of putting all your hopes into this one basket, you just got to settle in, you know, and build up your family, have children, and let your children have children, and sort of work, strive, seek the welfare of that city, where you found yourself, your enemy city. You know, work for the welfare of where you're at, even when it's not where you really want to be. This week, the situation has changed in Jeremiah 31. For at this point, the worst has happened, and the second invasion has taken place. And now there is no thought of an early return, because everybody is in exile at this point. But this is the very point where the promise really flowers, the promise of God through Jeremiah. This is in some ways the heart of the book of Jeremiah, the work of the prophet. The prophet who came with a twofold purpose. His first purpose from God was to tear down, to break apart. And sometimes in the walk of faith, we are so complacent, we are so set in our ways that we need to be broken down and torn apart, because we have built upon foundations that are not as firm as we think they are. But that was not Jeremiah's total message, because his message shifted. Once they found themselves in Jeremiah, you hear the words of hope. And this is, you know, what comes through fully in Jeremiah's words from God in this particular section. Let me just remind you of them, because you heard it a little while back. The days are surely coming, says the Lord, when I will sow. There is a hopeful image. I mean, we're now in a time of reaping in the fall. But the day is coming, Jeremiah was talking to the people, when God will sow. And just as I have watched over them to pluck up and to break down, to overthrow, destroy, and bring evil, you know, there's that one part of Jeremiah's calling. So I will watch over them to build and to plant, says the Lord. There's the words of hope. To build and to plant. These are not things that happen overnight, are they? To plant means put into the ground, and it takes time. To build, it takes time. In the Dominican Republic, they have an interesting way of building. You know, they don't wait until they've got all the money to build a house. This is probably true in a lot of places. They don't have all the codes that we have here, where you have to have everything up front. They build as much as they've got money for. And you see a lot of houses, and I think this is in Nigeria too. You see a lot of houses that are only half built because they're awaiting a time when there will be more building. There will become a time. Okay, it takes time. Now, this is the section where it deals with, you know, that sense of responsibility that comes with sin. This is where there is a shift that takes place in the Old Covenant, in the Hebrew portion of the Bible. Prior to this point, we see corporate sin as being key, that I pay for the sins of my fathers. That I am, and you know, that is true for many of us. We are continuing habits and processes that we have learned from generations past, and some of them there are good and some of them are not. You know, it is said, you know, if you look at systems, family systems and other system ways of looking at things, that it sometimes takes a couple generations to change a faulty system because people have learned how to operate wrongly. And we talk about dysfunctional families. Those are things that don't necessarily change overnight. It takes time as we deal with the sins of the fathers and the mothers some things that got to change. It doesn't happen immediately. And yet, here in Jeremiah, it talks about with this sour grapes, if you heard that thing. It talks about personal responsibility. A shift that it's not necessarily a given that what has come will have to happen. Like some of us grow up with that sense of, well, you know, I'm just a Haynes, and that's all I'm going to ever be. My mother used to tell me that everybody looks down on the Haynes. and it's something I've had to deal with a lot of my life. And I'm sure there are things you've had to deal with your whole life. But the gospel here in Jeremiah, the gospel is that some of these things can change. That we are not set in stone. That new things can sprout. The field of our lives that was once planted with alfalfa can be planted with corn, to use a farming illustration. God can work in our lives and change can happen. There's this thing called personal responsibility. And that's, you know, part of Jeremiah's lesson here. And he is telling the people that the days are coming when I will make a new covenant. It will not be like the old covenant, a covenant that I made previously, but this covenant that I make with the house of Israel, I will, and this is the interesting part, I will put my law within them. I love these words. And I will write it on their hearts. An interesting thing I said last week, and I hope you heard it, was that the time of exile, the time when God's people were exiled to Babylon, was perhaps some of the most fertile time in the life of Israel. It's the time when a good portion of the Hebrew portion of the Bible came into existence in terms of being written down. And a lot of the stories that we think of, like the book of Job and some of these other Old Testament books, Ruth and others, came into existence at this point. You'd think now that exile would be a very negative experience, that it would be a time when the people of God were just marking time until God would act and bring them out. I mean, after all, everything that held them together was lost. They no longer had the land. The land belonged to somebody else now. They no longer had, you know, the capital, you know, or the king, the political institutions. That was all gone. They no longer had the temple that was kind of the focus of the cultists. The worshiping practice of God's people is no longer in existence. The things that gave their life meaning were gone. And yet, in Babylon, a religion was formed that has lasted thousands of years. They became not just a nation, they became a people more fully. Interesting things happen in exile, as I said last week. And there's this promise, and it's not a promise that we should necessarily just take upon ourselves and say, it only applies to us as Christians, because it applies to all. It applies to the Jews as well as the Gentiles. It applies to everyone. And that's the promise, that I will put my law within them and I will write it on their hearts. And one thing I want you to know is that that is not something that happens overnight. You know, we have this image of faith that is sort of like the Staples button. You got it? You know, the Staples button. I need, boom, and there it is. But that's not how it happens, is it? It doesn't. It takes time and effort. You got to do what? You got to be persistent. Persistence is very important. And our persistence as believers depends upon a persistent God. Because if I know this book of books that we have, which is really a library, is the story of God's people. It is also the story of a persistent God who does not give up. That's the constant throughout all of this, is it not? The persistence of God. In some ways, God is that widow who keeps badgering over and over and over and over again. That's why when we come to God in prayer, we can be persistent. Because we know that God is not like that judge. No, that judge would just sort of like things to remain as they are, and, you know, because God is not that kind of judge. God is, if you will, a persistent widow. And so that when we come to God, God hears with those ears and responds with persistence. It may not be in our own timing, in the ways we think things should happen, but God is steadfast. There is another word for persistent. God is true. And for us, we be preachers, we be persistent, we be awake. Okay? There's the lead-in. Shall we stand and sing our final hymn? Awake my soul, stretch every nerve, and what is it?
Press
and press with vigor on. Let's be persistent and sing.